You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Happy Pride Month.
Woohoo! Woo!
So this is kind of, it's a time and a space to celebrate all of the beauties of being queer, but it also provides a space to discuss issues which affect us as a community. So let's get on to that bit. Conversion therapy is a practice which attempts to change the sexuality or gender identity of its recipient. The practice has been criticized as being pseudoscientific, and evidence shows it to be incredibly harmful to the mental health of queer and trans youth, a demographic with already high rates of mental illness and suicide. The practice doesn't so much convert one's sexuality or gender identity so much as it represses it. The United Nations and other human rights organizations say the practice amounts to torture. Conversion therapy is still legal in Aotearoa. Currently, Labour, the Māori Party, and particularly the Greens support banning conversion therapy. 72% of the population also support a ban. There is even a members' bill lodged by Labour MP Maria Lubick in 2018, which could readily be made law. Yet the government seem reluctant to push the needle, only going so far as to promise a ban by the end of the year. Justice Minister Chris Farfoy has been reluctant to give a time frame for when we could expect the legislation to actually be introduced. LGBT activist groups have urged the government to act faster. Having pushed the issue for 4 years now, they posit that at this point only government action could push the issue further. I spoke to Shanil Lal, co-founder of the Conversion Therapy Action Group, who are working to ban conversion therapy in Aotearoa, New Zealand. We talked about conversion therapy and its effects, the religious freedom argument, and why action to ban the practice has been so slow. I started by asking them what prompted them to start the group and about their mahi.
I co-founded the Conversion Therapy Action Group after speaking at Youth Parliament and realizing that there wasn't much being done to end conversion therapy in New Zealand, although it was such a no-brainer. In the summer of 2017, when I was volunteering at the Middlemore Hospital, a priest walked up to me and offered to pray my gay way. I refused, but he looked at me and he said, "It's hot, but you know what's hotter? Hell." And you just think about it, that 35 years ago, homosexuality was a crime. 8 years ago, same-sex marriage wasn't a reality. And to this day, it is entirely legal to torture queer people to change sexuality or gender in the name of conversion therapy. So I knew that I had to do something. And the type of work that we've done is that before we co-founded the group, Young Labour, Young Greens, Rodney Labour petitioned to end conversion therapy. Maya Lubeck wrote a member's bill and put it into the member's ballot to end conversion therapy. Since then, we've lobbied politicians, political parties, and supported medical bodies to actually come out and say that conversion therapy is unethical, ineffective, and often harmful.
So what's conversion therapy like? How does it affect the psyche of the people that undergo it?
Yeah, so conversion therapy looks very different now in New Zealand. It doesn't look like concentration camps, which is what people normally think when you say conversion therapy. So conversion therapy is really any practice that aims to change, suppress, or eliminate someone's sexual orientation, gender identity, or gender expression. Frankly, conversion therapy is just junk fun. It isn't therapy at all. It is torture. So Joanne Bellingham, who grew up wanting to be a nurse, but when they found out that she was a lesbian, she was taken to the hospital, not as a nurse, but as a patient. She was falsely diagnosed with a personality disorder and given over 200 electric shocks because she was a lesbian. She's 69 years old now. She is still a lesbian, but she says that she ended up hating herself. But now people have turned to things like psychoanalysis. So you sit down with a psychologist or a counselor or a therapist one-on-one, and they tell you that your sexuality can be changed, and they give you tips, for example, statements that will help you apparently rewire your brain. Some people also use things such as evasive therapy, which includes snapping yourself with a rubber band or having an ice-cold shower or generally just inflicting pain on yourself every time you feel or think queerly. The goal is to make queer thoughts or feelings evasive by associating it with pain and suffering, so accepting your queerness becomes a punishment. There's absolutely no evidence that conversion therapy works. However, there's an abundance of information out there suggesting that conversion therapy increases depression level and suicide rate.
Who tends to get conversion therapy?
Conversion therapy is completely legal in New Zealand, so that means anyone can access it. But it's largely young people who are under the guidance of their parents. So what we know is that religious leaders are one of the most significant practitioners of conversion therapy. There are numerous stories of young people there that pray to God to heal them or kill them after being told by their church to pray for forgiveness. There's a fine line between religious freedom and religious bigotry. Conversion therapy is the latter. Religious leaders have weaponized the relationship that queer people have with God and manipulated them into thinking that God will hate them if they don't change. This is bullying prevented in love. And really, it's an insidious abuse of trust and power.
How would a ban on conversion therapy be enforced? If conversion therapy tends to be a decision that's made for a young person by their families and within these insular religious communities, how do you make sure that this practice doesn't just shift underground instead of being eliminated?
There are two different concerns. One is that banning conversion therapy will make it underground. That's not the case, because what we have seen that ever since we started having this conversation, conversion therapy has gone underground. What we have currently is a problem where conversion therapy is one, underground, and two, it is legal. So people who are forced into it or are accessing it or have accessed it are not able to hold the government accountable or these service providers accountable and are never able to get any redress. So that's a problem that we already have. So banning conversion therapy is less about completely eradicating it, because there's always a black market for things, but more about allowing people to hold service providers accountable and seeking redress. Because what we have seen is that when conversion therapy survivors have come out and said, this is what has happened to me, the state says that it's legal and you can't really redress it, or you can't get money for that conversion therapy or the harm that has been done. But I think what's also important to recognize is that we're not asking for a token ban. I have made it very clear. My position is that we need a ban, but we also need a line of resources that will go directly to the survivors and victims of conversion therapy. What we also need is a very clear pathway to help those survivors and victims to seek redress. And further, what we need to ensure is that we're not going into communities and making more harm. So identifying what the scope of conversion therapy is in all communities, especially in non-white communities, so that we can create a bill that will eliminate those as well.
You addressed concerns about religious freedom earlier in this interview. Simon Bridges is one person who has said that he thinks that a ban on conversion therapy would be an attack on free speech. And other MPs like National's Nick Smith and Labour's Duncan Webb have also raised similar concerns about a clash with religious freedom. Can you address this argument?
Yeah, as I said, there's a fine line between religious freedom and religious bigotry, and conversion therapy is religious bigotry. So when we see, when we look at conversion therapy, what we know is that one, it does not work ever. Two, we know that it increases depression and suicide levels. If queer people were driving religious people to commit suicide and get really depressed, that would not be tolerated. So why would we tolerate it otherwise? But to also recognize that no freedom or right is absolute. The religious freedom can be limited. In every democratic society, the rights and freedoms of people are balanced. Section 5 of the New Zealand Bill of Rights Act allows for justifiable limitations on the rights promised in it, and that includes religious rights. The severe harm avoided by banning conversion therapy provides for a more than justifiable reason. So we can limit, and we have limited, many rights and freedoms because none of them are absolute. In this case, banning conversion therapy is a justifiable limitation on religious rights.
Even without a clear position from the National Party and ACT staking themselves against the ban, Labour, Greens and the Māori Party have more than enough numbers between them to pass a bill banning conversion therapy. There's also very high public support for a ban, 72%. In light of this, Labour's promise to ban conversion therapy by the end of the year seems very cautious, don't you think? Why don't they just do it now?
That is something that we have been questioning the Labour Party on. It has been almost 4 years since we submitted the petition to Parliament. All prominent medical bodies in Aotearoa have opposed the practice. My LULAC wrote a members' bill that is ready to go with a few changes. The Labour Party has enough seats in Parliament to ban conversion therapy. 72% of New Zealanders want to see a ban of conversion therapy immediately. We have done everything that the Labour Party needs. The only thing standing between conversion therapy and a ban is the Labour Party's unwillingness to do it. If the Labour Party wanted, they could start the process today because Parliament resumes today. But the Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, has said that she wants to see a bill in Parliament by the end of the year, which means we won't see the ban until next year. And that is really frustrating because we've done everything. She just has to act on it.
Is this lack of urgency a common theme towards issues affecting the LGBT community?
I personally think so, because what we have seen is that more and more people are becoming complacent. What is happening is that every time we say that there is an issue that affects queer people, people tend to say, well, you have gay marriage, what else do you want? I think for a very long time, the rights of queer people has been treated as like a list of things that other people have to put up with, rather than equality in all aspects. But I would say, yes, the Labour Party has become complacent and that they need to act to show their solidarity rather than make promises.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.